From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, a palm reader talks about the future. And happy St. Patrick's Day to all of you. At the end of the program tonight, Christian Wilde, one of our guests, has put together a great rendition of "Oh Danny Boy." He'll be singing that for us. That's right at the end of the show. Stay up. Here's what's happening. Tragedy in Atlanta. Atlanta massage parlor shooting suspect Robert Aaron Long took responsibility now for the string of the Tuesday night attacks that left eight people dead and another person injured. Police officials said the investigation is still ongoing, but the events were not believed to have been racially motivated. Instead, they believe that Long opened fire because he saw locations as an outlet for him to succumb to purported sex addiction temptations. Just a bizarre story there. The IRS appears to have decided to heed the pleas of lawmakers and advocacy groups who've been urging the tax agency to postpone this year's April 15th filing deadline. Take heed here. House Ways and Means Committee Chairman Richard E. Neal of Massachusetts said in a statement that the agency had postponed the filing date until May 17th. So that gives you a little more time. Wall Street ended higher on Wednesday after the Fed predicted a fast economic recovery from the coronavirus pandemic and said it would maintain its interest rate at close to zero. It's pretty good news. They're talking about a new law that could force employees to contribute to their own 401. If you don't want to, it doesn't matter. You're going to have to do it. I wonder what this all means. Let's check in with registered investment advisor Mish Shedlock. Mish, what do you think of that one? Forcing people to contribute to a 401?
I don't believe so. It's a tacit admission, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
That, we're going to make you contribute because guess what? Because Social Security is not going to be there for you like it is for the baby boomers who are retiring now. That's what it means. And the Fed today said that they commit to a full range of tools and they seek inflation above 2% for some time. If they put home prices in the CPI, as I believe they should be, they would have 3.5% inflation right now. The Fed doesn't see it. So committing to this inflation is hurting everybody who still hasn't found a job. And that's who they say that they intend to help. One more thing, if I can get in on this tax delay.
Yeah.
There's a little quirk in this law and in that tax bill that just passed. It's a very important one for someone right on the bubble. The cutoff, George, is really, really fast. If you're right at that cutoff line, $75,000 for individuals, $150,000 for a couple, you're going to not get those checks that are coming very fast. Just a few thousand above that, the checks are going to stop. But guess what? They wrote into that law, George, that they will use last year's filing.
Uh-huh.
If this year's filing is not in. So anybody right on that bubble would benefit who was below the cutoff last year should delay that filing, George.
I like that, Mish. That might work for some people. All Israelis returning from abroad can be required to wear an electronic bracelet to ensure that they isolate at home or be quarantined in a hotel, according to a bill approved by the Knesset. The legislation gave the government authorization to force those who enter the country from abroad or from specific countries to choose between the two options, except for children under 14 and other special humanitarian cases. Let's check in with Howard Bloom, our expert on the global brain. Howard, what do you think of that? I hope that doesn't happen worldwide.
Well, this is a tricky one. Since January 25th, Israel's closed its borders to foreign travelers. But if you're an Israeli citizen, as you just said, and you're re-entering the country from a foreign nation, you're required to spend 2 weeks in quarantine either in a government hotel or at your home. Now, the real trick is to make sure that you do not step out of your quarantine location even once. And how can the government be sure that you're abiding by this restriction, a restriction that could feel like prison to you, but that could save other people's lives? The new law passed today that you were talking about in Jerusalem requires that you wear an electronic bracelet that will tell your government if you leave your home or hotel room. Now, say the Israeli authorities, the electronic wristband, will not invade your privacy. It will not listen in on your conversations. If you leave quarantine, the electronic wristband will not even report your location. It will simply report that you are not where you were supposed to be. But you can easily imagine how, with just an extra chip or two, the electronic wristband could listen in on your most private confessions and keep tabs on you 24 hours a day. So where you stand on this electronic intrusion depends on where you sit. Imagine the electronic bracelet being used in the United States. If you're a Republican and the electronic bracelet was imposed on you by a Biden administration, it might look to you like the beginning of a new communist totalitarianism,
yep,
the mark of the beast, and a sign that Biden is the Antichrist. And if you were a Democrat and a Trump administration forced you to wear an electronic bracelet, it might appear to you to be a move toward a Trumpian dictatorship. But if you believed in your government, the bracelet might seem like a wise idea, which brings us to the really tricky part of this story. The real leader of Israel's war with the coronavirus is not Israel's health ministry. Israel's minister of health, at the beginning of the COVID crisis a year ago, said COVID was irrelevant because the Messiah was about to come in April. So he acted as if COVID did not exist and, in fact, came down with COVID himself. Yet Israel is one of the most admired countries in the world for its success confronting COVID. More than half the Israeli population has now been vaccinated, a level of vaccination no other country in the world has come anywhere near achieving. So how did this happen in spite of a health minister who was asleep at the switch? Israel's spy agency, its Mossad, is recognized as one of the most effective intelligence agencies in the world. In February 2020, just as COVID was rearing its ugly head, the head of the Mossad ran into the head of Israel's biggest hospital, the Sheba Medical Center, at a private dinner and got an earful on the coming danger of COVID and on the serious shortages already hitting Israeli hospitals. So the Mossad made the war with COVID one of its highest priorities. The Mossad chief called around to the heads of foreign intelligence services and to the heads of a few countries and managed to wrangle medical essentials for Israel just before the world was about to cry out for them. These included COVID tests, ventilators, masks, and protective equipment. The Mossad also obtained the technologies Israel needed to manufacture ventilators and masks of its own. And today, Israel produces 25 million masks a month. But if you were ordered to wear an electronic bracelet for 2 weeks, would you get queasy about the fact that a spy agency was at the center of your nation's anti-COVID campaign? And it all depends, George, on whether you viewed that spy agency as your enemy or trusted that spy agency to defend your life. And Israelis believe their Mossad saves lives.
Howard's website, Howard Bloom, BLOOM.net. Thanks, Howard. We'll talk to you next week. Great report. A new study from NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory and researchers at the California Institute of Technology questions whether or not a long-held theory about Mars is still holding water. In their research, the team of scientists deposited a large quantity of Martian planet stories and said that water had not escaped into space due to its low gravity, as previously assumed, but instead was trapped in its crust in minerals and might still be there. That might be good for those people who go to Mars one day. Did you know heart disease is the leading cause of death for men, women, and people of most racial and ethnic groups in the United States? One person dies every 36 seconds in the United States from cardiovascular disease. 655,000 Americans die each year from heart disease. In a moment, Dr. Stephen Sinatra joins us. It's been about 8 years since he was last on with me. We will talk about how extreme negative emotions can be a catalyst for a cardiac episode, next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, our special guest tonight for the first couple hours, Dr. Stephen T. Sinatra with us, board-certified cardiologist and an assistant clinical professor of medicine at the University of Connecticut School of Medicine in Farmington, Connecticut. He is certified as a bioenergetic psychotherapist, nutrition and anti-aging specialist, founder of the HeartInstitute.com website, a very informational website dedicated to promoting public awareness of Integrative Medicine, as well as Vernvana, V-E-R-V-A-N-A.com website, which is on high vibrational living and foods. His expertise is grounded in more than 40-plus years of clinical practice, research, and study. Last on with me about 8 years ago, Stephen, wasn't it?
Yes, sir. What a memory, George. That's really amazing.
Good to have you with us. And I got to ask you again, for those new people, are you related to Frank Sinatra?
Well, we think we are. I mean, the problem is that my grandfather and his father, they grew up in the same town in Sicily, but the library burned down in 1898, so the records were lost. But my father looked just like him. My father was a musician, a tap dancer. He was in theater. And all my kids play musical instruments. And my daughter was an actress in New York City for a while. So I don't know. The genetics could be there, so it's possible.
Maybe, maybe. And you know what? There aren't that many Sinatras running around, so it's possible.
No, that's true. That's true. But, you know, his first wife, Nancy, God bless her heart, she lived to 101 and a half, and she was an amazing lady. I visited her several times when I was on the West Coast lecturing. So she was a real sweetheart.
Wow, that's fantastic. Hey, Pete, is it true that people can die of a broken heart?
Oh, absolutely. When I was a cardiologist in my earlier days, I was only in my 40s, but I wrote the book Heartbreak and Heart Disease because I saw so many people who had such emotional stress in their lives. I mean, men who lost jobs during the Vietnam War, breakup of marriages, the death of a loved one. I mean, that's the worst, George. You know, when a couple is married 40, 50 years or so, and all of a sudden, you know, one of the people has a sudden unexpected cardiac event. I saw maybe six or seven cases where the opposite spouse, whether it's a male or female, would pass within 24 hours. My earliest one was within 3 hours.
Oh, my God.
3 hours. You know, her husband died mowing the lawn. She found him out there. She called an ambulance. And all of a sudden, 3 hours later, she was gone with a heart attack as well. So, you know, overwhelming emotional stress just triggers the autonomic nervous system. You get an outpouring of stress biochemicals. It can cause high blood pressure, arrhythmias, chest pain. So people must protect themselves from emotional stress, especially unexpected events.
Do you have to have clogged arteries to have a heart attack?
No, you can have a normal heart. That's the amazing thing. You can have, you know, normal coronary vessels. However, clogged vessels are much worse. But again, people with normal coronary arteries with good blood flow can develop these situations, and we call it coronary artery spasm. In other words, the vessel, because of overwhelming stress, can go into spasm. It could lock down. There'll be an immediate cessation of blood flow, and all of a sudden you get tissue that dies. We call it cellular necrosis. And, the heart balloons out. It goes into massive dysfunction, and it's serious. I can tell you that. As a heart specialist, I've seen a lot of, you know, very, very serious cases.
What would you recommend as the best diet for people who either have heart issues or you want to maintain a strong heart?
That's a great question. I've been studying diet for years. I mean, one of the greatest things about being a heart specialist is that you keep learning year after year. You know, one of the worst things about being a doctor, George, is that it takes like 50 years to really learn this profession, and then you die, you know what I mean, or you retire. But one of the things about diet, and I've been studying diet for decades, is that, you know, the Okinawan diet used to have the monopoly on longevity in the world. These are people that were living in southern Japan, they were mostly vegetarians. They did eat a lot of pork, however. That was their one meat dish. Pork has a lot of coenzyme Q10, which I've written about and done a lot of research on. They ate seaweeds and good stuff. But over the last decade, this is amazing, the Mediterranean basin and countries in the Mediterranean basin have now surpassed Okinawa. So when Okinawa had the monopoly, now it's Spain number one, Portugal number two, Italy number three, and then the other countries around that Mediterranean basin. And I think the Mediterranean diet is hands down the most, you know, heart-healthy diet you can possibly eat. And, you know, the Mediterranean diet has fresh fruits and vegetables. It has red wine, has some white wine. I think olive oil is literally the kingpin. I mean, I think olive oil is the secret sauce of the Mediterranean diet. Because if you look at all those countries in the Mediterranean basin, whether you're from Morocco or Libya or Greece or Italy or
or Turkey. It doesn't matter. I mean, but they all use olive oil, so I think olive oil is really important. And the science actually attests to it, because the medical research on olive oil is incredible, absolutely incredible.
What about sugar, good or bad?
Sugar is horrific. You know, sugar, one of the reasons why Americans live like 8 years, you know, less than the average Mediterranean. I mean, think about that. I mean, we're a highly industrialized society. You know, although we rank 30th in the world in infant mortality, I mean, you know, we do have a robust economic situation, and still we're not doing well. So, you know, when it comes to sugar, Americans eat the most sugar probably in the world, and it's not good. The average American eats about, probably, it used to be 150 pounds a year. Now it's over 160 pounds a year in sugar.
That's a lot of sugar.
Camouflaged and so many, you know, foods. I mean, you know, we eat a lot of carbohydrates, a lot of bread. We do eat a lot of pastas. Now, the Italians eat the semolina pastas, but then, you know, they produce chickpea pastas, red lentil pastas, which are higher protein pastas. These pastas are really heart healthy, because you don't develop an insulin response like you do with a white flour type of pasta. So the secret, you know, that I've learned over the years as a heart specialist is you cut back on the carbohydrates. You use more healthy fats in the diet, more healthy proteins. And if you cut back on the carbs, you get less of an insulin response. Because what we have learned, the physicians in America, over the last, I would say, 2 decades, but especially within the last decade, is that insulin is the most inflammatory hormone. And what we call the most endothelial cell unfriendly hormone. In other words, certain bursts of insulin that are provoked by raising up and down blood sugar, so to speak. You know, when we eat foods that are very sugary, like a soda, for example, is, you know, pure sugar, mm-hmm. That people get in fast food restaurants. When you eat these sugars, you get an insulin response, and that insulin in itself causes inflammation of the smaller blood vessels, and we cardiologists know that that inflammation is the root cause of just about any illness, including cancer, memory disorders like Parkinson's disease, and absolutely, without a doubt, heart disease.
I supplement a lot, Stephen, and one of the things I take to reduce inflammation is turmeric. What do you think of that?
Love it. Absolutely love it. I mean, this is... this has bioflavonoid activity. It actually supports the brain. I love the combination of resveratrol and turmeric because of the synergism. And that's a word that probably your listeners have heard before. But what it means, George, is that instead of 2 + 2 = 4, if you eat two foods at the same time or take a vitamin that has two, let's say, phytonutrients in it, like resveratrol and turmeric, you get this synergistic or additive response. And, you know, it's great for the immune system, great for the brain. Resveratrol and turmeric are good for blood sugar relationships. So as a heart specialist, I really like those two nutraceuticals. I mean, they absolutely work.
Theoretically, if the heart keeps bumping and your other organs don't break down, how long could you live?
That's, you know, nobody has ever asked me that in question in my entire lifetime. That's a first. I mean, look, the heart beats, what, about 100,000 times a day?
Yeah.
More?
Keeps going.
Think about that. I mean, that's unbelievable. I mean, one thing magical about the heart is that it's an electrical system. I mean, we're electrical beings. I mean,
exactly.
We're bones and blood and protoplasm, but we're really electrical beings. You know, that's why the electromagnetic revolution, you know, with computers and Wi-Fi and all this electromagnetic soup, you know, it tends to cause accelerated aging, just like blood sugar causes accelerated aging. But, you know, the heart is so remarkable because it's the most intricate, it's the most specialized, and yet it's the most vulnerable. That's the problem. It's the most vulnerable. But if you can, you know, erase the vulnerabilities and shore up the protective aspects, like taking vitamins and minerals, you know, eating less sugars, you know, grounding yourself, using mind-body techniques. There's so many ways you can protect the heart that if people are privy to that And if they do have a family history of heart disease, then they can do measures throughout their lifetime to protect your heart. Because you're right, George, once the heart stops beating, it's over.
It's all done.
Prehistoric man even knew that. Do you realize that? Prehistoric man knew that all life depended upon a pulsating heart. So you have to keep the heart
That's
pulsating.
Right. Stephen, stay with us. We're gonna
pulsation, we're done.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back and chat more right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with Dr. Stephen Sinatra. Stephen, what are some of the telltale signs that you might be having some heart issues? What kind of things can people look for?
Well, if you're a male, the most obvious issue is if you have substernal chest discomfort, and if the chest discomfort radiates to the left arm, or you have difficulty breathing, or you know something with certainly fatigue. You know, those can be telltale signs, especially if it occurs during exertion. In other words, everybody's heard in the Northeast, for example, you're shoveling snow and you got to stop because you're having chest discomfort, or you're walking your dog and all of a sudden, you know, you have a feeling in the chest. And many of these feelings, George, there's a mind-body connect here. So if you have an emotional stress at the same time you're doing some physical activity, that in itself can overstimulate the autonomic nervous system and even cause more havoc to the heart, especially if you have undiagnosed, cholesterol-laden plaque, you know, involving your coronary arteries. Now, in a woman, the symptoms are totally different. I mean, women can have dreadful fatigue. They can have shortness of breath. They may have substernal chest pain. Usually their symptoms are ill-defined, though. They could have just discomfort on one side of the chest. They could have pain radiating up into the neck or the jaw. I'll never forget, I saw one woman. She was in the emergency room for 6 hours waiting for an oral surgeon, and the nurses asked me to see her because she looked awful. And I was there seeing another patient, and I asked for an electrocardiogram, and sure enough, she was having a full-blown heart attack. But she had zero chest pain. It was only neck, jaw discomfort, and that's why, you know, they called the neural surgeon. So when it comes to heart disease, women are different than men in the presentation of symptoms. Men are more classical. Women are more ill-defined. And one more symptom that has bothered me over the years, especially in women, was the sudden onset of dreadful, and I mean dreadful, fatigue. Like a typical woman who was one of my patients. She went down to the basement to get her laundry. She put all the laundry in the basket. She walked up the stairs, and all of a sudden, she couldn't move.
Wow.
She said, just dreadful. I mean, she had no strength in her muscles. And, fortunately, she called an ambulance. And, again, when I saw her in the emergency room, you know, a massive heart attack. So those are real-life stories. And, heart disease can present in almost any way. But, again, classical symptoms more common in men as opposed to women.
Do some people have heart attacks, maybe mini heart attacks? They don't even know it, and it goes away for a while?
Yeah, we call that silent heart attacks. About 25% of people can have a silent heart attack. In other words, they may wake up in the middle of the night with a sweat, a little shortness of breath, maybe some ill-defined discomfort in the chest. They go back to sleep thinking it was nothing, and everything clears up, and they feel fine.
Yeah.
Over the next 3 days or 4 days. And then all of a sudden, they may get symptoms again. They can be what we call small cardiac events. And again, 25% of all heart attacks are silent. And I can tell you, as a heart specialist, that's the biggest dilemma that I've faced over the years. And the problem is, it's harder to diagnose heart disease in women as opposed to men. And that's one of the reasons when I was chief of cardiology at my institution, I wrote the book Heart Sense for Women, because in women, like I said before, it's all bets are off, so to speak. I mean, you really got to be a detective. In men, it's a lot easier, especially they present with more classic symptoms.
They have new digital scanners now that digitally can look at your arteries. What do you think? Do you think everybody should go through that procedure and have their arteries checked out?
Well, there's a lot of tests people can get. You know, some of these non-invasive tests are good that can pick up plaquing in arteries. 20 years ago, when they came out, or even actually 30 years ago, I even had this test myself because I strongly believed in it. They would do it like a CT scan of the chest. We call it an EBCT scan, an electro beam computerized tomography. And the problem is you would get some radiation to the chest, but this would pick up calcification of the coronaries, and these highly sophisticated x-ray techniques, which most university hospitals have now, where instead of getting an angiogram where you have to inject dye into the heart and, you know, it's an invasive test, you go inside blood vessels, now you can do an x-ray and determine whether you have plaquing in your coronary vessels or calcification. And if you do, then the incidence of a cardiac event is certainly much greater. The more calcium you have in your heart, in other words, if you have a calcium burden of, let's say, less than 100, that's really good. Zero is the best. But if you have a calcium burden of over 1,000, then your incidence of having a cardiac event is really significant over the next 3 years. So these calcium score tests are really vital.
What do you think of pets? You think pets are important for people who have had heart issues?
Oh, my God, absolutely. Oh, my God, pets are awesome. They're incredible. You know,
what do they do?
Well,
how do they
work? First of all, they give you unconditional love. You know, when you have a pet, and if you have a heart attack, and you come home to a loving dog, that dog is going to love you unconditionally, no matter what. And when I was, you know, treating heart disease on a day-to-day basis, and I had patients who were divorced or single, and they went home to a lonely house, I would see them again. And if they came home to a judgmental spouse, if they came home to a lot of anger or a fighting in the house, it was even worse. But George, if they came home to a loving dog, and that dog would wag their tail, and they would look at you with those eyes, and you'd pet that dog, and that dog would just love you unconditionally. That energetic transfer, and I'm speaking as a psychotherapist now, but that energetic transfer of that dog's unconditional love for you is absolutely healing for the heart. And I can't tell you how many times when I was practicing cardiology and I would see, you know, a married couple, they would lose a spouse and they were lonely, you know, the kids were out of the country or they were away or they didn't even have children and significant others in their life were disappearing. I would tell these people, go to a Biowee home, you know, go to a shelter. Let a dog pick you. In other words, if there's a dog that really is attracted to you and chooses you and you choose that dog, that's a magical potion for healing your heart, and I've always believed that. And I've had dogs all my life. I mean, I absolutely love dogs. They're phenomenal.
What is the supplement D-Ribose?
Oh, I love that. That's one of my awesome foursome supplements. I developed metabolic cardiology, oh, gosh, about 20 years ago, after I heard one of my board-certified cardiological colleagues, Dr. Jim Roberts in Ohio, one of the best cardiologists I've ever, you know, met in my life. I was at a lecture in Las Vegas. Actually, the year was 2004, I believe. And I used coenzyme Q10 and magnesium and L-carnitine in my patients for a couple of decades before I heard this lecture. And, you know, George, 85 to 90% of my patients got better. They really did. I mean, even my heart transplant patients, I mean, they got better. But what kept me up at night was the 10% or 15% of failures. Oh, my God. One failure would keep you up all night thinking about it as opposed to nine successes.
I could believe that.
No, it's because as a doctor, you know, when you see pain and suffering and you can't help these people, it really drives you crazy. It really does. I mean, I had many sleepless nights thinking about my patients. But when I went to that lecture on D-Ribose, I had this incredible aha in my seat. I had this incredible joy because Dr. Roberts gave me the missing link that I needed for that remainder of the 10 or 15 patients, because D-ribose is really the center of the molecule that we learned in high school biology or college chemistry or biology. It's called adenosine triphosphate. That's our chi energy. That's our prana. That's the energy of life. And D-ribose actually makes that ATP molecule. Now, you know, we've all forgotten high school biology, but there's a shunt, a metabolic shunt in the body. We call it the hexose monophosphate shunt, you know, to give the terminology. But this makes D-ribose in the body for the sole purpose of making our chi, our prana, our ATP, our total energy. And the problem with heart disease is that you can't make the D-ribose fast enough to make your ATP or your chi. Remember, in World War II, the German war criminals, they used, you know, cyanide.
Oh, yeah, so they didn't have to face the music.
Yeah, execution and stuff like that. They would take cyanide. Dude, see, cyanide works so quickly because what it does, it uncouples the production of ATP. We only have 8 seconds in the body. So if you knock out the, you know, the metabolic machinery to produce, you know, our energy of living that makes us breathe and stuff like that, it's over. It's over. And, you know, these people would stop breathing. They go into convulsions, and they would die. They would die very, very quickly. So D-ribose is the energy of life. And if you take it with CoQ10 and L-carnitine and magnesium, that's my awesome foursome. And that's one of the reasons why I wrote the book Metabolic Cardiology. And I actually did, you know, 3 editions of it because it absolutely works. I mean, I got to tell you, that's one formula that has saved literally hundreds and hundreds of people. And you know what gives me the greatest joy, George?
What's
I mean, this is incredible joy. I have seen so many children who are waiting for heart transplants, and I had, you know, their parents crying in my office. I mean, literally sobbing because they couldn't find a heart for their 9-year-old or their 5-year-old or their 14-year-old. And I would put them on a metabolic cardiology program. And would you believe these children right now are in their late 20s and early 30s. Many of them
are amazing.
As kids because they refused heart transplantation. Amazing.
Where does spirituality fit into some of this?
Oh, man, now you're really getting into some good stuff.
We're getting deep.
Well, my God, you are getting deep. Well, no, spirituality is very important. You see, oh, God, you know, when Tommy and Rosa and I, you know, did our book, Health Revelations from Heaven and Earth, I saw at least 20 life-after-death situations. I mean, you know, people who went to the other side and came back. And I was really prepped for Tommy's story. And one of the things about spirituality, and this is, and I really believe this, George, it might sound a little bit off-key or crazy to you, but, you know, we live, you know, as human beings, and we have a physical, we have an emotional life, and we have a spiritual life. And I think heart disease is when we sort of get on the road less traveled, so to speak, you know. In other words, our body becomes out of sync with the physical, the emotional, and the spiritual. And when that happens, we're very vulnerable to cardiac illness. And I know this is going to sound crazy, but I have a feeling sometimes angels shake us into a situation where that if we are, you know, so disconnected emotionally, physically, and spiritually, that something for many people, I think heart disease is placed in their path to get them back to snap out of it, to wake up, to look at their emotional life, to look at their spiritual life. And I've had many deep conversations with, you know, my patients, especially since I became a certified psychotherapist. I would talk to patients very deeply. And, you know, patients would say to me, George, you know, I think this heart attack doctor was placed in my path for a reason. I need to learn something. And, you know, and when a patient comes up with that profound thought that this was placed in my path to learn something, there's something I need to change in my life, doctor. I have a second chance. I get it. I should have died and I survived. Especially the survivors of sudden death who saw themselves floating on the ceiling and saw me resuscitating them. I'll tell you, you know, being a heart specialist is like being a priest, a rabbi. It's like being, you know, a spiritual creature yourself because, you know, you're really working with dimensions that you think you'd never work with. But again, I mean, it's part of the business. And, you know, I think some of my colleagues who, you know, look at the spiritual aspects of heart disease are doing the right thing.
Can severe heart disease be reversed?
Absolutely. Oh, my God. Absolutely. I mean, when I was a medical student, I'll never forget this, George. When I was in my pathology classes as a young student, the professors would always say that the prognosis of heart failure was worse than cancer. Now, think about that.
Oh, my God.
It was worse than cancer. And I went to Albany Medical Center in Albany. We were a cancer hospital. And you know, that really stuck in my brain for years because they always preached that you know, 50% of people with heart failure would die within 2 years. And you know, after I discovered, you know, metabolic cardiology and I started to use the awesome foursome, I was seeing patients live in 5, 10, 15, 20, 30 years, and this is without heart transplantation. And I'll tell you, There was an article that
hold,
I read.
Hold on right there, Stephen. We're at the top of the hour. We'll come back and pick it up right there. And we've got an hour of phone calls with you next.